Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. It's Lori Miller, and I am missing my co-host, Ted, just briefly. He is stuck on a train, so I do believe we'll thank Mercury Retrograde for that. But welcome back. We have a really cool guest tonight. Joseph is super funny, super intelligent, and he's really good at what he does. So we're going to welcome Joseph Aldrich of the Cypress Group, and he's going to talk tonight about the 10 most important things you need to know today. So hello, Joseph. How are you?
Hello, Miss Lori Miller. How are you? I miss Ted already.
Already, right? I know. So crazy.
I miss Ted already. All right. I'll just hold out for that then.
No. Let's start without Ted, and he'll be fine. He'll catch up.
All right. I'm here. I have tea. Go.
Let's talk about these 10 most important things I need to know. Obviously, I need to know about the storm tomorrow.
There's a storm. Do you need to know about me, or do we not care about me?
No, we definitely want to hear about you. Please, tell us a little bit about yourself.
This is me leading the witness.
Yeah.
So for people who don't know, my name is Joseph Aldrich. Nice to meet you all. I have a company, a boutique marketing communications firm out in lovely Palm Springs, California. Super sorry to hear about your blizzard that's coming out there. And we specialize in doing marketing communications for smaller businesses, typically within the shelter industry, meaning shelter being anything that has walls and a roof is how I define it. So it goes everywhere from real estate agents to contractors to interior designers and people who put goods and services into those spaces. So I'm not a really good meteorologist. Sorry about the weather. But I kind of know how things get into homes. Now, the second part of that is that I am, how shall we say, I'm an older person at 56 years old. And so I'm actually very classically old school trained with media and marketing and communications. And so a lot of what we do is adapting what's really, you know, classic everyday common sense marketing communications into what we call the new world order, which is, you know, look, the new world order today, let's just, you know, call it what it is. Nobody goes many places. We are very
not allowed,
literally nobody goes many places. We get a lot of our information from the things called the interwebs. And, you know, that's just the way that it is now. You know, that's kind of the biggest change, actually, if you were to ever ask me what's the biggest change that I've seen in the world has been, you know, since 1989 when I entered the actual workforce. Is, you know, it used to be back in the day that, you know, consumer or retailer or purchasing work, you know, you as a business, whether it's insurance or whether it's cars or whether it's interior design or whatever, you were a part of the research equation for customers. You know, they would be, okay, great. And they would pick up the phone book or the newspaper or whatever, and they would pick three places to go and to meet the people and talk. And you were a part of the equation. So you became a part of their decision-making process. And what has happened even in the past, maybe, you know, 10 years is that that's completely gone cattywampus. You're not a part anymore. And now by the time any business hears from a consumer, and this is true, even if you're a restaurant, right? By the time they make a reservation, they know about your menu. They know about your food, right? They know about, you know, whether you provide good customer service as an insurance broker and whether your receptionist, if you're a doctor's office, is nice. They know all of this already.
Correct.
Which is good and it's bad. The good part is right. that you have a much more solid chance of actually keeping a customer if you know this. The bad part is that you have to control them enough and give them the right information and the right guidance about you and your services and your product without even knowing who they are.
Yes.
Or when they're doing it. And so and that just informs a lot of what we do. So there we go. How do we know if people are on here asking questions? Do we know this?
They may be listening through their email. If they want questions, and you people, you can call in 516-387-1640, and then we let them in. So I can see.
Ah, there we go.
If someone's calling in. Modern technology.
Got it. Yes, technology.
So, modern technology is so great. So now
yes, it's true.
For our listeners, right, if they're starting
yes.
out and say, I mean, technology is definitely primary. Now, I know myself, I've gone through 10 versions of a website, right? So let's talk about what the website does. How do you think it drives traffic or doesn't drive traffic? Do you deal with that? What do you do?
So really quickly, we should probably tell people that in full disclosure that Lori is a client of ours. And so we work with her on stuff. Just to be fair, right? Having said that, technology is kind of like woven through. Should I just jump into my list? Should we do that? And then Ted can just pop in whenever he feels like it. Okay.
Absolutely.
I have a list of 10 things, you know, if I could cross from anyone at coffee and, you know, say these are the things you should be doing, I have a list, right?
Okay.
This list is in no particular order, right? Nor is it in any particular priority. It's just 10 points that I tell people, and some of them you will recognize, okay? The first thing I always tell people is to know your audience.
Mm-hmm.
And in this time and age, your audience and your customer and your clients are all the same people. And they're the people that are either prospects or existing customers or, you know, depending upon what your business is, anywhere along the spectrum, right?
Right.
And when I say know them, I always say, you know, and not in like a theoretical sense. It's know who they are. How old are they? You know, where do they get their information? How do they make decision-making? You know, what's their decision-making process? And because I always tell people, I say, you know what? And in our world, the world that we live in, Lori and I, a lot of times, you know, design people and service people are, hey, I want people with money because it's kind of a luxury item. And I would say, that's great. Let's walk into Starbucks and show me the person who has money without saying a word, right?
Yep.
You need to be able to say, this is my client. You know, I was in a meeting today, and the lady that I was meeting with, very lovely, a Southern California interior designer, she was my customers and my clients are, you know, she said middle-aged. She referenced 45 as an age, which to me is young, but that's fine.
All right.
She said they're middle-aged, married kids with 2 to 3 children who are in the 14 to 19 range.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that she typically engages with them because their kids are all growing up and they're in high school. And she's like, okay, now we can have nice things because my kids aren't going to be ruining it.
Right.
And that's okay, great. You know, when I say know your audience, it's okay. You know, where do these people go? What clubs do they belong to? And you can, without even hiring a professional, you can get, you know, you can just Google the statistics on where these people are. You know, a lot of people talk about social media. It seems easy, right? But if your customer is a 52-year-old insurance salesman from you know, mm-hmm. Spokane, Washington, right? They're not on Instagram, really.
Right.
So spending a lot of time doing that, not so good, right? They probably read trade
right.
journals, so maybe you should look at doing print advertising. They're definitely mm-hmm. doing stuff on LinkedIn, so you need to optimize your LinkedIn presence, right?
Right.
If you have a, there's this whole cult of what I call the Whole Foods moms, right? Which are typically right. suburban affluent females who, you know, all buy the same thing.
Right.
When you know who your customer is on a very tangible level, you can find out how to reach them. And that's the important thing. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, or you can do what a lot of people make the mistake of doing and trying to reach and appeal to everyone, right? And if you mm-hmm. have the time to do that, then, you know, power on for you. That's just not my particular approach, right? I'm like, I'm more of a, what do they say? A gunshot over a machine gun kind of a person, right?
Mm-hmm.
I always said if you, yeah. So that's number one.
Number one.
There we go.
Okay.
Number one.
Number two.
Number two picks up on that, and it's speak your audience's language.
That's interesting.
Well, you know, I come from a corporate world. My first career was in the technology world as data communications like emerging. And so I was surrounded by people who spoke corporate-ese and people who spoke engineering-ese. And how engineers talk about products and how corporate people talk about products isn't how you or I talk about products. You know, and when when you go to a coffee shop, right, people who work and live for coffee, they use
mm-hmm.
words, you know, whereas you or
mm-hmm.
I would simply say, oh, I like it because it's kind of woody and heady.
Right.
Because these days, most people don't like to think too much when they're making decisions.
Right.
So you have to give them words that they know because they don't want to have to try and translate things in their head because they're too busy scrolling or they're too busy looking for the information that they need. And if they have to decipher what you're saying, right?
Right.
They're not going to do it.
Then it takes too long and you lost them.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then the point five version of that is not only to speak their language, but to learn the difference between what I call features and benefits, right? And so feature might be that an interior designer can, you know, give you 42 different finish options for a kitchen or create a sofa that fits your 6'8" husband, right? That's a feature.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The benefit is
right.
is that a designer can bring the solutions to you and save you time
mm-hmm.
and energy, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Yes.
And
that's the language.
You know, this seems very logical. Yes, but you know what? A lot of companies, you know, all you have to do is pick up a newspaper or magazine and read, and print is not dead. People are still reading things.
Mm-hmm.
And you see a lot of people just speak above their clients or their prospects' desire to listen,
right.
for lack of a better phrase, right? And they don't use words
right.
that they need. You know, and so, and it's like, I think that you and I have even been in meetings. I'm like, okay, dude, say that again in English.
Right.
Like, what does that mean? Right. Translate.
Right.
And so, yes, speak your audience's language. It's actually super funny. I'm sitting here in front of my computer and this little thing is telling me how much time I have remaining. So that was number two.
Number three
is very in line with your practice. And that is to be empathetic. And when I say that, I mean it's less about the emotional side of being empathetic as much as it is being able to logically see your product through the eyes of your customers and your prospects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we're building websites, you know, everybody wants to put everything, and they want their website to be like this little Library of Congress that's all about their business. Every thought, every process, everything that they do, every product that they use, and they just want it to be like this little box that has everything. You know,
right.
And if you're a homeowner or you're a consumer of things, you don't always want to see all of that, right?
Right.
And depending upon what your business is, you know, you may want them to see all of that, right? Or give them the option somewhere to be able to look at it if they want. But it's like, okay, how does this look to the people who are looking at it? And whether it's print advertising or whether it's emails, you know, it's the ability to say, okay, this messaging and this communication isn't really about me. It's about the person looking at it on the other side, which I think is kind of one of the definitions of empathy, if I understand it correctly.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. How am I doing so far?
Doing great.
Okay.
Fantastic. Even without Ted, you're doing very well.
Even without Ted, I know. I'm super disappointed that Ted's not in because I was all set to dazzle him, but apparently not.
Ted will be here, I promise.
I know. Okay, that was number three. So number one was know your audience. Number two was speak your audience's language. Number three was practice empathy on a logical level, right? Number four is to be consistent in everything. So, you know, your website, your business card, any collateral you might use, any direct, anything you might use, any advertising that you might do, it needs to all look like it comes from the same place. It needs to have but you'd be surprised how many people don't actually do that, because again, they're thinking, oh, I need to do, you know, an email or an ad or a social media post, right? And they're bored looking at their logo, because people do get bored looking at their logo. It's like, oh, well, I'm going to try something different today, right? Right. And then it's like, okay, don't do that. But it just all needs to be the same. And consistency refers, you know, in the world that I live in the business that I'm in, consistency doesn't refer just to the overall look. It refers to the tempo of your communication, right?
Right.
And the cadence at which you speak to the market. So if you're doing social media stuff, you know, and even if you don't have a lot, you know, do it a couple of times a week, right? Rather than, okay, I'm going to fit spurts, you know, just make it easy and consistent. Even when we do, here's something fun that you'll know. Even when we do media outreach and development, we stagger it out because it's easy. It's better for people to have a more consistent flat line of communication, right? Where you're speaking and you're talking to people on a more regular basis rather than just throwing everything at them all at once.
Right. Okay.
You know, it's kind of like
intermittent
the calming
reinforcement for the lab rat.
Yes, with positive feedback. She's at the end of the tunnel.
My psychology background.
She's at the end of the tunnel. So, you know, and there's all sorts of tools. And if you want to change things, I'm not saying don't ever change anything, right? For
mm-hmm.
anyone who might be listening, the magic number is 3. So if you change something up, change it up consistently 3 times. So if you're going to change your email template, great, change it for 3 cents. If you're going to do, you know, one of the things that drives me nuts about people who actually do print advertising is that they think that they need to have a different ad every time because they get tired mm-hmm. of looking at it, right? They're like, oh, people, I want to show more. I want to show more. When really it's no, let them see the ad 3 or 4 times so that it hits with them. That's what, that's how people's minds work, right?
Mm-hmm.
It needs to see it a few times before it registers and then change it. But, mm-hmm. you know, if you're doing a print ad 4 times a year, you can literally run the same ad 4 times. Because the chances are that the second time somebody sees it, it's going to be so far away from the first time, it's not going to connect. And I always think it's better for people to get sick of seeing something than not to be able to connect the dots together, right?
Interesting.
So, you know, just little things. Are you taking
Very
notes? Are there?
I am,
are
actually.
Are you really? Are there?
No, I'm not taking notes. But I did get to run it 3 or 4 times before you change it.
Right. Just, you know.
You know, because these things are important, you know. I mean, listen, advertising is, you know, it's pricey. And you want to put your money where it's best well spent. Everyone, you know, we all know that it's easier and less expensive to advertise on the internet. But like you said, there is still print. So, you know, if you're going to spend that kind of money, then you want to make the most effect or you want to be as effective as possible. So it
Right.
would make sense to know how long to run it before you change it.
Right. You know, and so, and that doesn't even just apply to print. It's like, okay, you know, if you're even doing something where you're running a sponsored ad on Facebook or Instagram, which are really good things if that's where your audience lives, bringing it all back to, you know your audience and know who they are, right? If your product works well on that and you're like, oh, great, I'm going to invest $50 a month on
mm-hmm.
the technical term is performance marketing, right? On pay-per-click stuff, you know, don't
mm-hmm.
swatch it up. Run the same one because you
right.
want people to know who you are and they're mm-hmm. going to identify. And it should be one of your better performing posts, obviously, right? Because you're going to want
right.
people to be able to take that image and attach it to you. And that requires repetition. Usually by the second or third time, people are like, oh, who is this? Mm-hmm. And that's one thing. Who is this? Why do I keep looking at this? You know, happens all the time. So that was number 4.
Okay. 5.
Number 5 is know what works.
Okay. Explain.
And how, well, I was going to ask you, how do you think you can figure out what works?
Well, that's a really good question. But before I answer that question, we have our co-host, Ted.
Ted
hey,
is here.
Hey, how are you? Hey.
Hi, Ted.
And I'm still in a noisy place, so it's probably just keep me on mute. And
okay.
When I get to a quiet place, I'll be back.
A
All
quiet
right.
place.
Yeah, just
it
to
sounds,
keep you up
it sounds
posted.
Like a he is on the
sound
train,
like
so okay.
Yeah. So, all right. So we'll continue, and then I'll fill Ted in for where we're at. So
So five,
okay.
We said, was, yeah, so you
know
would ask
what
me
works.
And then I got distracted. Know what works. So if obviously
know what works.
You post something and you get feedback from it, then it's working.
Correct. And when you're doing social
That's
media
good.
Posts, depending upon which one you're doing, you know, there's a lot of matrices that you can use to kind of let you know what's performing, right? So that can go anywhere from the number of views, the number of comments and retweets on social media. If you're doing print advertising, obviously, you know, direct communication or is optimum, right? But one of the things
mm-hmm.
with the way the world works is that it's just as good if you monitor your web traffic. So if you have an advertisement in a local or national anything, right? If you run it and it hits, let's
mm-hmm.
say, on January 2nd, so you can theoretically monitor your web statistics and you should see, if it's effective, you should see an uptick in people coming to visit your website if it's a good ad. If it's not a good ad, you'll either see flat traffic. So it's a question of, is it the right medium or is it the message, right? And that's a different conversation. But those are ways
right.
that you can actually manage that. And which brings me to my favorite thing, my, you know, if you don't have Google Analytics and you're a business person, if you don't have it on your website, call up whoever does your website or whoever manages your website and says, quick, I want that, and then learn how to use it. That's like the magic. That tells you everything. It tells you where people are going on your website, which is, I suppose I should say, it goes without saying in my world that your website is your number one tool for organizing and judging your business these days, right?
Right, yep.
You know, it shows you who's, the what's, the how's, and where they're from, and it lets you see what cause and effect you have going on, right?
Right.
And so you can see if you send out an email blast, yes, you can see your web traffic coming from it because it has, you know, email apps and email people talk about open rates and click rates. That's one category. But then it also
mm-hmm.
goes over to levels of engagement on your website. So, and it's not, you know, it's something you may not like numbers, but it's something that people need to do to be successful in their business these days. It's
right.
the way it is. 100%. And I know you have experience 100%. With this.
Well, before, if anyone wants to call in, it's 516-387-1640. And I'm just going to tag in for a little bit because Joseph and I had a discussion the other day that it's sometimes better not to have a website than to have a bad website.
Yes, it's a
Did
thing.
Did not.
It is a
so,
thing.
You know, yeah, so you know, if you're not going to do the investment, don't have one.
Or and you know, and people always think that a website, yeah. And, you know, and one of the greatest misperceptions that people have come across, you know, and the first website I ever built was way back in, you know, the early, mid-2000s, right? I think the first time I started putting it together was maybe 2006. And everyone always thinks it needs to be this very complicated, like, dream entity. And I'm always
right.
like, oh, no, it doesn't have to be that. It just, it can be simple, right? It
right.
can get your message across. And if you want to do stuff, but what it should be is it should be dynamic. So great. You
yeah.
want to do 700 things? Wonderful. Do 700 things, but don't do them all at once. Spring them out, like have a plan, right?
Right.
That stuff makes sense because it just falls in line
right.
with, you know, consistency. And then also search engines.
Mm-hmm.
Love changes. So putting everything in one space
oh.
and doing nothing with it doesn't make the search engines happy. So you have to go back and retouch it on a periodic basis. just to keep the dust settling.
Huh. Did not know that.
See? Fun fact for the day. And the next,
thank you.
The next bullet is, if you know what works, guess what the next bullet is?
Right.
What's the next one,
Lori?
Alrighty
then.
No, what's the next
know.
Bullet? You don't know. Okay. That's it. Know what, it's
don't
the
know
converse,
know.
Which is know what doesn't work. You know? Oh, I tried
okay.
that. It didn't work. Great. Don't do it ever again. Right? Oh,
right.
I spent $10,000 on an email campaign with a local magazine and I got nothing out of it. Great. Don't do that again.
Right.
You know? What doesn't work is equally as important. And a lot of people do a lot of things to do a lot of things because they think they have to have a lot of their bases covered. When realistically, they just need to do the right things. And sure, the process of doing the right thing starts out with doing everything, but then you just pay attention and the things that don't work, you go, oh, they don't work, I'm not doing them anymore, and don't do them, right? One of the smartest things that I ever heard way back when I was like 32 years old, somebody said, well, what would happen if you stopped doing it? And if the answer is, oh, nothing happened when I stopped doing it, well, there you go.
Then you
right?
shouldn't be doing
There's,
it at
yeah,
all.
Then yeah. you shouldn't be doing it at all. Right, exactly. Exactly. Am I making
yep, I'll go
sense
with that.
So far? Okay.
So far?
Oh, wait, what number
sure.
are we
Sure.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, 6. We're number 7. Wow, number 7 was 27 minutes to go. We're doing quite well. so the, I think we're doing pretty well. My next point per se is to know your business.
Yes.
And as far-fetched and as logical as that seems, right?
Right.
There are not a lot of people who actually put that into practice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so what does know your business actually mean? It means, okay, great. You know, not only know your business, like how does it work functionally, but know how do people come into your business? How does your business fit in to the rest of your business community? You know,
right.
you have to be able to contextualize your business the right way, especially now more than ever.
Right.
You know, again, and it kind of ties a whole bunch of things in together because you can't, you know, nobody has, most of the people I deal with are small businesses, you know, and small
mm-hmm.
businesses might even be as large as 150 employees these days, depending upon who it is.
Right.
But nobody has the ability to just, like, do everything.
Right.
Anymore. There's just so much that needs to be done because we, as business owners, have so much that we need to do. We have to be in charge of promoting ourselves, right? We have to be in charge
yeah.
of making our business run. And we need to
yeah.
know how that works. And we need to know how that then translates into the people that buy our products. And it's like, okay, great. I get most of my leads from, you know, I believe that, I don't know if it was Lori that I was talking to you or somebody else where we were having a conversation about this.
Can we lose
her
you?
Clients because her I'm still here. Are you still here?
Yeah, you broke up for a minute. You had a conversation about
Did I?
About,
okay.
And, yeah. I'm back.
I was having a conversation with somebody about their business and about the purpose of media and advertising in their business, and it turns out that they were a design firm, that their customer wasn't really their customer, because their customer, they thought their customer was a homeowner. But when we sat down and we talked about how people found out about their business, it turns out that all of their best projects were referrals from contractors. And it's like, okay, then who's your customer, right? Is your customer, are you spending all of this time, you know, is your value is not being seen by the customer, the homeowner, but it's being seen by a contractor. So change focus, right? And make contractors your customer. So it's just, you know, one of these things. And many, many, many moons ago, one of the things that I realized is that small businesses aren't really small businesses. Small businesses are part of this weird osmosis-oriented kind of large business, because you're an interior designer, right? But you also deal with cabinet manufacturers. So you're this, you're at any project, you're like a company because they're fulfilling your orders. You have a PR and marketing person. They're your marketing department, right? And so it's actually seeing your business not as an independent business, but as, oh, I have these five other people that I engage with, and we're all one business. You know, a little woo. It's a little woo-woo for a podcast on a Thursday. But know your business, right?
Exactly.
Right?
That was six, right? Was that six or seven?
That was seven. We're on to number eight.
All right, number eight.
Number eight. And wait, oh, eight was 22 minutes. Yikes. Let the professionals be professionals. Let people do what they are supposed to do and what you hired them for.
Okay.
And this runs the gamut on so many things. It's just, you know what, you hire people, let people help you. So if it's, you hire a social media person, great. Let them do it, because they probably know it better than you, because you probably wouldn't have hired them if they didn't. Let the front office people be the front office people, because if you hire them the right way, they know how to work the front office. Just let people do what they're supposed to do.
Absolutely.
That's a different subject. Okay, wait. Talk for 20 seconds while I have a drink of water.
Oh, look at you.
Okay.
Yeah, after
there we go.
After you're done, I want to hear how you got into the PR marketing arena.
Oh, I can totally do that. Number nine is one of my favorites of all time, because I so I come from this point, and anyone who knows me will be nodding right about now, where people just don't want to think anymore, right? They don't want to read. They don't want to think. And so I always tell people, I said, keep it short now. People don't want to read. People don't want to read seven paragraphs about anything. People don't want a huge essay on LinkedIn. You know, they don't want to look at a PowerPoint presentation with lots of text on it. You have to learn how to shorten your communication. Which is a skill, to say the least. A skill. It is a skill to speak concisely and shortly. Yeah. Because, again, we as business owners, we want to inundate, you know, we want to impart all the information to prospects that we possibly can. And when I speak to, you know, in my PR part of my world, when clients speak to me about me, they're like, okay, but what about this? What about this? What about this? And it's, okay, that's conversation number four, right? Because you just need to say, this is a really cool blank, because it makes people's life easier. And then people respond. And those people could be media people. Those people could be blogger people. Those people could be clients. It can be any number of people. It's just keep it, you know, what's the old acronym? Keep it simple, stupid. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
You know, just keep
it short
and simple. And then number 10 with 19 minutes remaining.
That's right.
My new favorite thing for January 27th of 2022 is pick up the phone.
Oh my God.
And call people.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Pick up the phone and call people. Because that's what people want these days. People are a little inundated with impersonal messaging. They're inundated with electronic everything. Picking up the phone and calling people is just awesome sauce. And oddly,
can I
people
add
are
an 11?
Up the phone and answering these days. Huh? What?
Can I add an 11?
By all means. Yes.
And follow up to make sure they got whatever you sent.
Yes, it's true. You know, there was a while where people were, oh my gosh, why on earth would I want to, you know, talk to people? And then there was a period of time where people were like, oh, I don't need to talk to anyone. I can get all of the information that I need by not talking to people. But then, golly, it turns out when you don't talk to an interface with people for 2 years, people all of a sudden like talking to people again.
Right.
Like, go figure, right?
So true.
So
very
that's my 10.
True. All right, plus.
That is my 10.
Okay, plus mine.
Plus 11, right. Follow up. We'll make that number 11. We'll do follow up.
Perfect. So now tell us a little bit, how did you end up in PR marketing from what you were doing?
Oh, my gosh. So my first career when I graduated from college was in, I'll take it back farther even than that. When I was trying to figure out what I wanted to be when I grew up, I wanted to be a photojournalist because I used to read, remember Life magazine? I used to read Life magazine. Like, oh my God, how great would it be just to like travel around the world, talking to people, taking pictures and writing great stories. This was like my goal.
Right.
And then I got to college and I started like looking at what would actually happen with a career in photojournalism. And I was like, oh, okay,
right.
I really just can't be poor. I can't be poor, you know, and
right.
live in a shack for 15 years until someone decides to cut me a break. So I changed and
right.
I went into communications and business. And it just turns out that my original career was in technology. And so I did a lot of business and product and market development with technology at the time, and it was very product oriented back then because it was a little different. That, you know, what we know as the internet now was very far away. And when it was time for me to do my own kind of career change, you know, 13 years ago or so, I did this clever little exercise where I just kind of looked at what I had done and what I did well. And it turns out that
right.
in my career working for other people, I had never taken a job.
Oh, all right, next up.
Hey, Ted, you're not on mute.
you're not on mute. Last up.
Put me on mute. Go put me on mute. I'm about to go outside and it's going to be noisy out.
Oh, I can do that?
So mute. Yeah, I think you push a mute button somewhere.
Oh, I didn't know that. Modern technology. Okay, carry on.
Modern technology. Carrying on. And so I sat down and I looked, and then it turns out that in all of my professional years, I never took a job that existed before me. Every position that I had had in, you know, 20 years was, hey, we want to do this thing. We have this new market. We have this new product. We have like this new sales channel, all within technology, that we want to break into. And I was like, oh, interesting, fun fact, right? And so then I did one of these little, you know, you with a psychology background, you'll appreciate, I did one of these like core skill, you know, kind of competency exercises, tests, right? And it turned out that I was a very non-linear thinker. So I have the ability to, you know, as you know, like when people are processing information and trying to solve problems, there's two ways you can go about it, right? So you can go and you can say, okay, I'm going to start from where I am, and I'm going to go to step A and step B and step D, and then I'll be, you know, where I need to be, right? Or they look at the end result. They look at the end result and say, okay, great, that's F. So then I need to go D. I need to, you know, go backwards basically from what the result needs to be. And that's my methodology of thinking. And I'm like, oh, interesting, right?
Right.
And so I started taking these whole things and putting them together. And I decided that I didn't want to be in the world of technology anymore. And so I just kind of started throwing myself out there at a time when businesses were actually trying to learn how to leverage emerging technology. And one of my funny stories is that like for the first year of my business's career, my actual career was, every week I led a seminar on how to use LinkedIn and Facebook to grow your business. And this was like in 2008 and 2009, right? And I know I didn't want to do technology anymore. And so I just kind of like gravitated towards the design world because it's kind of something I've always just loved. And I've always loved architecture and design and, you know, homes and the way that people live in them. And so it just kind of was horribly organic. So I took these skills that I had, and it just turns out that, you know, I was able to say, okay, great. I'm good at helping people break down and decide what they need to do to move down their own path and what needs to be done to do it. And so I just kind of like, you know, opened the door and went down. And when I started, it was extremely, organic, and it was very, very Marcom focused. But then because I like meeting people, right? I had this Rolodex of people that I knew, and then people were like, oh, you know, blankety blank person over here, can you, you know, put my stuff in front of them? And I'm like, sure, I can do that at the time, because, you know, I never actually thought of myself as a PR person. But then I started facilitating PR, and I'm like, interesting. I'm like, oh, people will actually, that's a thing, because it's kind of the same thing. Uh-huh. But in keeping with, you know, my 10 points, it was always very intentional. It's like, okay, great. Yeah, we can submit your stuff. Because I use PR not as a get your brand in front of people so much. It's like, I always ask people, I say, great, you know, we can submit anything. What do you want? Why do you want to be published? Right. What's the net gain? And so I use PR as a business development tool as opposed to being a PR person. And there are people who are magnificent, pure public relations, white space, you know, is the old term for it, you know, pictures on white kind of people. And it just so happened that I entered into that at a time when people were trying to navigate this new digital media. You know, there was House, there was Pinterest, there was like all of this stuff.
Right.
And it's like, ooh, look.
And how do you know what?
And how do you know? Right. How do you know? He's like, oh, I have to be on purchase. I have to do this. I'm like, oh, why do you have to do all of that? What are you getting from that? Does it work? You know, mm-hmm. Much more logical than just pure PR. Because again, there was this woman and her name is Janet Ruprecht. And she was a peer of mine back in like 1992, maybe 93. And she was hella smart. And whenever we worked together and we were in a meeting and there was, you know, because if you work in a corporation, you know, there's no such thing as a 3-person meeting, right? It's always 5 or 10 people, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
She was always the antagonist when we were laying out programs who would say, well, why are we doing this? Right. What's the point? Where are we going?
Right.
Right? And I just started doing that back then. And so it's just become kind of, okay, why, right? Why? And it just kind of like stuck. And that's kind of how I got where I am by asking why a lot. asking why and not doing stuff just to do stuff.
No. And here you are on the podcast.
And here I am
again
on the podcast with 8 minutes remaining.
Oh, look at that. Now, if
I know,
people
right?
wanted to hire you, get in touch with you, anything, how would they reach you? Do you have a website?
I do have a website. Aren't you funny? It obviously has a lot of words on it. It's the Cypress GERP. CypressGERP.com, or people can just email you because the odds are pretty good if you they're listening to this, they're on your list. So,
right.
you know,
that
they can
true.
Probably reach me through you.
That is true. And you are in California time.
I am on California time, and we do work across the country.
Beautiful.
As it goes. So.
Beautiful.
There we go. Bada bing, bada boom.
Bada bing, bada boom.
We did this without Ted.
We did do this without Ted. Poor Ted missed the whole
wow.
thing.
Poor Ted. Mm-hmm. Well, we gonna have to come back and do it again.
Maybe because I had him on
have, like, lots
the whole
of questions.
No. Bring me. Yes, I am. And I have a question.
Yes.
Oh, look at that. Go for it.
Hey, I'm like American Express. Yeah, I'm like American Express. You can't go anywhere without me, so I'm here.
That's right.
Hi.
So I heard you talking about, Lori said follow up, and I heard you say pick up the phone. So you sort of alluded to how people went for a while of, I don't need to speak to anyone, and I'll send you to my voicemail, or I'll go to your website, send me a brochure.
Right.
So what's it, the one thing that would be considered old fashioned, like old school, is making cold calls. Do you think that has made a comeback, or is it still a horrible idea?
I think it's a semi-horrible idea. I think that it's a great idea, but you have to, so very few people actually do it the right way, right? You know, it's all in the lead-in, right? And these days, if you have the ability, I mean, when I was doing sales training with people back, you know, in the day, they always used to categorize leads, right? There were hot leads, warm leads, and cold leads. And so I think that you could totally pick up the phone if you somehow found yourself in a hot or a warm lead. I wouldn't waste my time with cold leads necessarily, right? Which is what, when people think of cold calling, they go, okay, great. You know, I told you, I think when we were talking about you, that one of my first jobs out of college was selling office equipment where I had to like knock on doors, right?
Right.
You know, who handles your office purchases? That's not going to work. But, oh, hey, you know, you clicked on my brochure from my email that we sent. I just want to make sure you got all of the information that you wanted. If you give me a call back, that would be great. That's very, that's a much narrower definition of a cold call, right?
Okay. Okay.
But which is what, you know, we have clients that we do when we do email communications and whenever we send, because we pull their data out of their database and we send it out to their database. And then when we do direct marketing pieces, aka email out, we send them the click list so we can see who opens stuff. And it was their job to contact those people to make sure, right, that they got the information that they wanted, because it's a good way to do that, right? So I think that has it. The challenge is to do it with using their words and being, you know, empathetic to what it is that they need to hear from you, and not sounding robotic, which is unfortunately one of the things that happens when people actually do cold calling.
Right.
I got a very interesting outreach on LinkedIn where this lady's like, we know like 12 people in common. We should really chit chat one day. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's a great idea. I looked at your profile. We do know these people. Why do I not know you in real life? Boom. And so now we're having a meeting next week.
Okay. What about, we're almost out of time. So quickly, what about the other old-fashioned thing, which is to send out snail mail, like a personal letter?
A personal letter is actually direct mail is tracking really high these days.
Okay.
Everybody loves a thoughtful piece of direct mail with their name on it that doesn't look like you went to Happy Printer and bought it. We've run a couple of, within the past 3-4 years, we've done some very successful direct mail things because people were, even before the pandemic, people were just getting tired of all of the deluge, right, of electronica that they were getting.
Right.
And so we ran a program with an international company that sent out collateral and samples to people in the mail, but they sent it out priority mail because it made people feel special. And it had a great response, right? And again, because it makes people feel special and not like some just another person along the mail stop, right?
Right. Okay, so now in 45 seconds, not 60 seconds, last words of wisdom.
The last... I think that, and again, I'm just going to say today, because you know what, in January of 22, this isn't like what I would consider to be normal circumstances in the world, right? I think that one of the things that's going to make people be most successful in anything they do is just being understanding and realizing that, you know, we're kind of all in this together, and that great, if I can't talk to you today, it's not because I don't like you, it's because I'm doing 40 million other things, and that a lot of our prospects and a lot of the people in our businesses, they've been stuck at home with their kids for like a year, you know, locked in homes, and that's not what they signed up for. So everybody's frazzled. So understanding and patience is just the rule of the day.
All right. And you said 40 million. I actually thought the number was up to 60 million, but I got it. 40 million. Okay. Oh, maybe that's California.
It's California ease. Yeah.
Okay. New York, we've got 60 million plus. So anyway, so definitely a great interview. I heard like the overwhelming majority of it. So a pleasure having you on the show. I can only say thank you.
Why, thank you very much. It was great. And I guess it will be up and running, what, tomorrow, right?
It should be up tonight.
For people who wish to know.
Yeah, it takes just a few minutes.
All right, then. There we go.
Yep. Up and ready.
Up and running. Okay, I appreciate your time, and thank you for having me on.
Thank you.
It's our pleasure.
All right. And wait, let me see. Should we just run out the clock because we have no more time? It's done. It has closed. There we go. Well, because I dialed in not through the talk radio link. I dialed in directly to the voice number. So there we go.
Perfect.
We'll see you next week.
All right. Hey, Lori, I guess
we'll
talk to you tomorrow then. Go
left,
home.
So we'll see you next week and talk
you
soon.
You got it.
Bye, everyone. Joseph,
all
thank
right,
you so
all right.
much.
Bye, everyone. Bye.
All right. Thank
Bye.
You. Hey, have a good evening. Take care. Good night.
Bye.
Bye.